This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 28th of September 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 27th of September 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. It is a great pleasure to welcome the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, who will be reading for us today.
Hello.
Together with Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Karen Cream.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. No special announcements this week. Lighting up times. Today, Friday the 28th of September, the sun rose at 07:02 and will set at 18:50. So sunrise about 7 o'clock in the morning and sunset at 10 to 7 in the evening. Next week, Wednesday the 3rd of October, sunrise is at 07:10 and sunset at 18:39. So 10 past 7 in the morning, sunrise next Wednesday, and 20 to 7 in the evening, sunset. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That's 01962 862826, and there is a laminated card with this information inside each wallet should you need it, but please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. The main headlines this week are: Let's Preserve Cathedral for Future Generations, Agonising Wait on Barton Farm, and Villagers' Fury over Undelivered Mail. So we will start with the story behind the first headline.
Let's Preserve the Cathedral for Future Generations. People are being urged to dig deep in their pockets to help raise £19 million to preserve historic Winchester Cathedral for future generations. The Dean of the Cathedral, the Very Reverend James Atwell, officially launched a fundraising appeal at a special evensong service last Sunday. The Anglican Church leader said, "A lot of us want to maintain our cathedral as one of our country's spiritual flagships. We shall do that only by refreshing it and not by mothballing it or pretending it can survive when starved of resources." The Dean went on, "This is a moment when our generation is called upon to maintain the fabric of this great building and increase its stature, so increasing it as a place of inspiration for the city, county, and diocese." The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, told a 500-strong congregation, "Please enthuse and please tell other people about this project. It really is good news and is such a wonderful project to support." During the service, leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Ken Thornburgh, pledged £500,000 of taxpayers' money for roof repairs on top of £500,000 for the education centre, totalling £1 million in all. The Tory council chief said, "At the very heart of our county lies Winchester and this magnificent cathedral. 10,000 children from our county attend each year for an educational experience few will ever forget, along with 15,000 more from across the country. We all share the responsibility to maintain this church in all of its glory, so that future generations may enjoy the splendour of Winchester Cathedral." The funding will be divided among several projects, including repairing the roof and medieval windows, improving the education centre, revamping the sound system and lighting. Meanwhile, three new exhibitions will be funded through the appeal. relocating the Winchester Bible to the ground floor, decoding the stones and architectural history of the building, and The Birth of a Nation, researching the cathedral's six mortuary chests containing the remains of Saxon kings. Dame Mary Fagan, the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, is also backing the appeal. She said, "Funding would allow the Winchester Bible to be moved, and it seems fitting that it should be displayed in the ground floor, as this is where it's believed to have been written." Hampshire-based writer and broadcaster Alan Titchmarsh, who has presented a number of Christmas concerts at the cathedral, also spoke in support of the appeal. He said, "We can all, over the next months and years, do our bit so that we can say it was not us who let this place down." So far, £3 million has been raised for the project, while cathedral bosses have applied for a £10.5 million grant from the Heritage Lottery Fund. The repairs are estimated to cost around £6.7 million, while £2.2 million will go on rewiring the sound and the lighting. Improving the education centre should cost £3.5 million, and the remaining £6.6 million will be spent on the exhibitions. And there is a colour photograph showing the clergy in their very colourful robes, including Alan Titchmarsh, Canon Annabel Boys, who is the Receiver General, Councillor Ken Thornburgh, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, Bishop of Winchester, Dame Mary Fagan, the Very Reverend James Atwell, Dean of Winchester, and Nigel Atkinson, Vice Lieutenant and Vice Chairman of Winchester Cathedral Trust, at the launch.
Agonising wait on Barton Farm. The wait over the decision on Barton Farm will go on for several more agonising days, it is thought. The government has been due to announce its decision on 2,000 homes on the farmland on the northern edge of Winchester on or before this week. But for an unspecified reason, the announcement is now due early next week. The Community Secretary, Eric Pickles, is making the decision after last September wrongly sending it back to be made in Winchester following a public inquiry. The developer, Carla Holmes, challenged that stance, and Mr. Pickles admitted his mistake in February on the eve of a court hearing. Now, Mike Emmett, land director of Carla, along with the anti-development campaigners, is enduring another wait. It has been nearly 20 years since the land emerged as a potential site for housing and was first identified as a reserve site for homes in 2003. Carla's current application was made nearly 3 years ago. Mr. Emmett said, "I have no idea what the decision will be. We have been through so many twists and turns that I could not begin to second guess what the government will do. This is off the Richter scale, by far the most drawn out scheme in my experience." He said that all the general comments about development coming out of Mr. Pickles' Department for Communities and Local Government indicated the decision would be to build. He said, "All the rhetoric about house building, increasing supply, kick-starting the economy points in one direction." The decision on Barton Farm will be watched by professionals across the country. The house building industry and the planners are saying this case is a litmus test to see whether the government is serious about house building, added Mr. Emmett. Last December, the City Council allocated Barton Farm as a site for 2,000 homes in its local plan. Some 800 homes will be social housing available for rent to those on the council waiting list. A 2-week hearing into the local plan is due to start at Winchester Guildhall on October 30th. The Save Barton Farm group says it will challenge the figures for housing needed on which the City Council rely. It has not ruled out further legal action. Gavin Blackman, chairman of the Save the Barton Farm group, said, "Given the impending inquiry into WCC's core strategy document, you would have thought Mr. Pickles would have deferred any decision until after the inspector had published his conclusions. However, whatever the decision, our objections to the fundamental flaws in the core strategy document will remain the same,
and we will present them as such at the inquiry.
Villagers' fury over undelivered mail. Residents must trek to Winchester to collect. More than 400 people in South Wanston have signed a petition demanding a return to the days of undelivered mail being left at the village post office. Royal Mail has started taking parcels and signed for items back to the main sorting office in Winchester instead of leaving them at South Wanston stores and post office for locals to collect. Post office chief said this brings the service in line with other areas and helps keep track of items. But villagers now face a 12-mile round trip to Winnall sorting office to collect undelivered parcels instead of a short stroll down to their local post office in Downs Road. Ron Chamberlain, sub-postmaster at South Wanston, said the changes would cause considerable inconvenience to locals and cost them time and expense. Mr. Chamberlain said it also meant loss of income for the post office, reduced footfall in the shop and removal of a public service from the hub of the village. And he blasted Royal Mail bosses for providing the service at the lowest common denominator as opposed to the best for everyone. Some 472 residents signed the petition requesting Royal Mail reinstate the service whereby undelivered mail is left at our local post office for collection. Some other village post offices have also been hit by the shake-up. Michelle Kasim, sub-postmaster at King Somborne, said locals now faced a 20-mile round trip to pick up undelivered parcels from Winnall. She said, "It has had a significant impact on the local community, especially the elderly who don't have cars. There is only one bus every 2 hours to Winchester bus station, and then they have to get a connecting bus to Winnall. For some people who have to go by bus, collecting a parcel could take an entire day and considerable expense. Nobody is happy about it, and the postmen are getting a lot of flack for it as well." The changes come as Royal Mail has announced plans to leave undelivered mail with neighbours, something it was previously banned from doing. Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP, Steve Brine, called for a little innovative thinking or a healthy dose of common sense. The Tory MP said there should be flexibility in the system for a much more locally driven solution, and if that means using the new Leave It With A Neighbour system as the first call with the village post office as the fallback, so be it. Making my constituents trek all the way into an already congested Winnall is neither helpful nor progress. A Royal Mail spokesman said people can request to have mail re-delivered to their home address free of charge or collect the item from their nearest post office for £1.50. He said, "We have made changes to the unofficial practice of leaving items of mail in the local South Wanston post office to be collected by customers who were out at the time. This is to ensure that we provide the same service to all our customers and to ensure the increasing amount of tracked items provide the same audit trail the sender has opted for."
That concludes our headline stories, which were read by Margot, the Mayor, and Karen. When we resume reading, we'll be having four readers, Margot, John, the Mayor, and Karen. But next, we come on to the death announcements. Bennett, Raymond John, known as Ray Bennett, at home on the 18th of September, aged 65. Keeley, Brian John Keeley, in hospital on the 16th of September. Mills, Rosamond Mary Mills, née Kimpton, aged 83 on the 23rd of September. Stevens, Bobby Stevens, on the 19th of September, aged 94. Unsworth, Peter John Unsworth, on the 14th of September. Venning, Patricia Venning, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester on the 17th of September, aged 90. Walden, Merla Walden, at home on the 17th of September, aged 67. Walker, Helen Walker, on the 22nd of September, aged 1995. And Wilde, Irene Maud Wilde, on the 22nd of September at Devonish House, aged 98. And next we have Christian Comment.
This week, Christian Comment is written by Terry E. Hemming, and he's entitled it Reflecting the Image of God. Like many other people, I have uploaded my holiday photos so that my friends on Facebook may see where I have been, which this year was a journey to the monasteries of Serbia, Kosovo, and Montenegro. Some of the pictures were taken in churches, where we needed special permission to use our cameras, as the notices clearly stated they were not to be used. Sometimes we could not take photos, as some of the monks and nuns didn't wish for pictures of people being taken. I was not surprised, for when I had visited Orthodox monasteries before, and when living in West Africa, some of my Muslim friends were very happy to exchange gifts as we parted, but not to allow photos of themselves. In some parts of the world, tourists are met with anger when they get out their cameras to record the poverty they see. That can come as a shock to many of us in the West. I photograph, therefore I am, is a quote we hear. At a recent wedding, the bride and groom asked their guests not to take any photos in church so that they could concentrate on the service. I hope that the photos they do have will have much more significance because of this. The couple were saying to their guests, take our vows and promises seriously. Listen to them and share what they mean to us. We have read of the legal and ethical problems which have recently arisen in the photos taken of the Duchess of Cambridge. The paparazzi, who chase literally others to get their photos, are not seeing a person in front of them, but merely the money they hope will end up in their bank account or the fame they have for taking the shot. How easy it is when using a lens not to see properly. We fail to acknowledge the humanity of the people we are viewing and only think of the photos we shall be able to show later. When Jesus warned people that the commandment against murder went further than just killing and that we should not only love our friends but our enemies also, he was making a similar point. We must view all people as reflecting God's image and having a value as individuals. Whether we view our photos through the media or if our own albums, we must make sure we are not merely consuming other people. That word consuming is in italics. Using them as a commodity. Other people have not been created for our entertainment any more than they are there just for us to exploit them financially. Christian love means caring, whether we are behind the lens or looking at magazines.
Next, we move on to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle yourself, you can do this either by telephoning 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. If you have access to email, you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Hampshire Chronicle is all one word. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or if you want to do it in the traditional way, you can write a letter to the editor, addressing it to the Hampshire Chronicle at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. So we'll now go on to the first letter.
And this first letter is from David Harfield, excuse me, who says, Cornerway's closure came as no surprise. Sir, I would like to thank the Hampshire Chronicle, Tim Cutter of Unison, and the relatives of residents of Cornerways for their help, support, dedication and interest with the closure of this lovely care home. The closure was to us obvious, because like all government departments, the County Council think that they are always right and always know best. My heart goes out to all these residents, because all these elderly, frail and sometimes confused people have now been told to leave the home they loved and felt secure in, through no fault of their own. A public consultation has taken place, but how many actually knew about this? I would also like to give thanks to the dedicated staff at Cornerways, who all enjoyed working there and would treat the residents as their own family. You would always be greeted with a warm welcome from the staff and carers. We have fought and lost because the council would not listen or reason. I think that should be listen to reason. This also means the staff have now having to go through redeployment or redundancy. I did attend the decision meeting and it seemed to me to be decided long before it started. They were determined that this home, with the others in Fleet and Gosport, was going to close. At this meeting were four councillors who in their own little way had to stick together. This is the end of the saga and a sad day for all concerned. To me it is not quite the end because I do see a glimmer of hope. In May 2013 will be the county council elections. Most seats are up for re-election. It could well be payback time. That's from David Harfield, Avondale Park, Colden Common.
Buttle writes a letter asking, what will they do with the money? Sir, Cornerways, the HCC care home in Kingsworthy, has closed for adult patients with dementia and Alzheimer's, along with ones in Gosport and Fleet. Council policy is to outsource frontline services to the private sector, following government policy and David Cameron's Big Society. In the eyes of many, this allows the rich to become richer and the rest of the electorate have to pay and become poorer. Of course, we don't, as taxpayers, have the luxury of knowing where the money from the sales of local government land goes, as this is confidential and covered by the Local Government Act, so it remains behind closed doors. The reason? Business sensitivity. Whose? Not the council's, for it's a public body. So we have a case where the options of reusing the building as a respite centre and or a day centre or upgrading to the standards required will not be considered. It will be sold, or has been already been sold, as a prime building land. If so, isn't it disappointing A2C couldn't use the land for affordable housing? Surely the Lib Dems have a voice in local government and favour this course of action? Obviously not. If any readers think the fact that money from the sale of Cornerways will end up in HCC's coffers for a rainy day is inappropriate, they should ask Mr Thornber and Mr Smith to step out of the shadows and let us all see transparent traceability. We all need to see where taxpayers' money is going. I would like to know where the money went for the sale of council property in the last 14 years. Answer. Sorry, we can't show you that, as Local Government Act prevents it. So much for the Coalition's pledge that we're all in this together. It's a letter from David Buttle, Falcon View, Badger Farm.
Hedge lopping has ruined our privacy, says Colin Farrow. Sir, Littleton is resplendent with tall trees and hedges, a haven for wildlife and for residents who would prefer to look at wildlife rather than gawp at their neighbours. The people are go-ahead and can-do by nature, but when asked during the production of the design statement for the village, most stress the importance of peace and privacy within their own properties. Behind my property was a tall hedgerow of hazel, bramble and ivy, interspersed with taller trees. Robins and wrens nested in that thicket. The robins fledged two broods this year and were taking advantage of the good weather and abundant food to rear an unusually late third brood. Ownership is debatable, given the unreliability of most land registry drawings, but the builders put my fence inside the hedge, so I suppose it belongs to the City Council. For the past 18 years, it has shown no interest whatsoever. Then, Out of the blue, whilst I was on holiday, the council lopped it to 2.4 metres. Both nests disappeared, and with it, five robin chicks. I haven't seen the bird since, and my privacy has been destroyed. Questioned, the council replied that they were acting on a complaint. We are not told who complained, but as the council freely admits, there was no loss of light. It can only be the complainant has an aesthetic dislike of tall hedges. I find it odd the council should support the complainant without consulting other residents. There are so few villages left where we can enjoy our privacy. This is why we chose to live in Littleton, and where the requirement for privacy is the norm, we fit in so naturally. In any event, the council is inconsistent, for it has planted trees on the roadside of the hallway, which are already much taller than the hedgerow. And that's from Colin Farrow, Fifield Way, Littleton.
Robert Howland writes on flexible promises. Sir, in the new Winchester District local plan, about to be examined by the planning inspector, there is a policy for the Barton Farm proposed development north of Winchester that says the land to the east of the railway line is to be publicly accessible green space. Another policy says that this already small gap between Winchester and Headbourne Worthy is one of the gaps to be preserved, and no development will be allowed on it that diminishes it physically or visually. Carla Holmes would like to be able to build on it, but the City Council's policies appear to say no. However, it seems council officers have said that this proposal, quote, could be given further examination in discussions with Carla Holmes, and the council believes there is sufficient flexibility within the wording of the policy to negotiate a satisfactory outcome, unquote. People who had really believed that the greenfield land to the east of the railway was safe from development may not have realised how flexible some policies can become. R. Howland, Park Road, Winchester.
Closing churches is not the answer, writes A. Crabb, Major Retired. Sir, I was appalled to read the report about the plight of St. Peter's Parish Church in Ovington, Chronicle September the 20th. It seems to me that the Church of England has lost sight of its raison d'etre and is operating as a corporate business engaged in taking, not giving. There is no obligation for a parish to pay any specified sum arbitrarily decided by Winchester Diocesan Board of Finance if it is unable to. There is an obligation for an established National Church of England to minister to the people, providing pastoral care to all parishioners, regardless of whether or not they pay. Closing churches is not the way forward. That is what the church commissioners, who are not leading a parochial church but running an estate agency, would have everybody believe, so they can make a quick profit from selling redundant churches for funds to gamble and lose on the stock market again. They have been engaged in asset stripping for many years and have no interest in the ministry of the Word of God. Parish share is not an enforceable charge, so I suggest the PCC of St. Peter's does what bishops of Winchester should be doing, taking care of their parishioners. Winchester Diocese has been in financial difficulties for at least 20 years because it has lost sight of its duty to serve people instead of bullying hard-working ministers and hard-pressed PCCs. If it served the people instead of the self-interest of the church hierarchy, people would fill the churches again. But first there needs to be trust between laity and the houses of bishops and clergy. It has been destroyed by abuse of power, deceit and mismanagement. That letter was from Major A. Crabb, Hensting Lane, Oslebury, Winchester.
Colin Terrell writes, M3 cutting wasn't so bad after all. Sir, Let us hope that those attending the Twyford Down rally next Saturday spare a moment to savour the vastly improved environment as they walk from Garnier Road and the city towards St Catherine's Hill. Those of us who recall negotiating the dual two-lane A33 bypass that severed the route before it was dug up on the opening of the M3 in 1994 can appreciate the fact that the two spiritual focuses of the area, St Catherine's Hill and Winchester Cathedral, are now reunited. As you walk down Plague Pits Valley towards the water meadows, remember the railway embankment and road embankment that used to block the valley and give some credit to the M3 cutting which allowed all this reinstatement to be carried out. Colin Tuttle, Take Down Meads, Winchester.
And Phil Yates says, empty shops soon turn into eyesores. Sir, I agree with Belgarham's comments on the two empty shops, one in Romsey Road and the other in Southgate Street. There is another, which has been vacant for many years, near the bus station. Originally a pub, known as the Running Horse, it was converted into shops in 1911-12, and for some years, Grants, greengrocers and fruiterers, occupied both units before they were split up to make way for Stevens Bakery and Pilot, men's fashion shop. I am surprised the City Council's Environmental Department has not taken issue with the owners of these properties, as they must be rat-infested, if nothing else. With regard to Snack Attack in Southgate Street, I've noticed that a light bulb is always burning on the upper floor. I'd have thought that Pearson's, the estate agent who apply the adjoining premises, would have taken some action in their professional capacity as property dealers. Now Belgarham has highlighted these eyesores. Perhaps the owners will attend to their neglected properties. We live in hope, says Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
John Robinson says that there is no technical reason to lower this limit. Sir, I am opposed to the idea of a 30-mile-per-hour limit on Springvale Road. I do not recall seeing any data on accidents, let alone any that would justify lowering the limit. If there is no technical reason for the reduction, I can only conclude that this is a political exercise unjustified by any facts. If those making the decisions were really interested in road safety, as opposed to making some political point, then they could, firstly, enforce the existing limit, secondly, improve the wretched street lighting, and thirdly, create a pedestrian crossing somewhere, say, near Tesco, as this could afford a safer passage for people to the shops and bus stops. John Robinson, Springvale Road, Kingsworthy.
Jane Harding writes a letter entitled Market Forces. Sir, my friends and I are amazed that discussion continues about the market in Winchester and felt that we must write again in support of the stalls, which we feel bring a vibrancy to the High Street as well as some excellent products. The food stalls in particular supply products not available in the city centre in individual shops, and we have been choosing to come into the city on those days to enjoy the meat, cheese and vegetable stalls in particular, which seem to be going from strength to strength. An empty High Street draws attention to empty shops, whereas the bustle of the market makes the city feel alive and thriving. So writes Jane Harding, Back Street, St Cross, Winchester.
R. Snell argues stalls bring people. Sir, re Linda Patterson's letter on stalls in the High Street, I believe the market brings much needed revenue to Winchester. The stalls attract people who hopefully will also use the main High Street shops. After all, they're not here every day. If anyone wishes to see the High Street in an uncluttered state, in my opinion, they should visit on a non-market day. As a Wintonian of some 75 years, I applaud the stalls for making a difference and hope they're here to stay. After all, people don't just come here to our city to take photographs and look at our expensive paving. So writes R. Snell, Fleming Road, Week, Winchester.
And Roger Farrell is commenting on the beautiful baskets. Sir, we were driving into the city along Southgate Street when we noticed the lovely hanging baskets. Having caught our eye, the delight continued along High Street, along Jewellery Street and into City Road. It didn't stop there, but spread into both Andover and Stockbridge Roads. Congratulations to whoever organised this, whoever planted up the baskets, and the shops and businesses who supported this. To those businesses that did not support this excellent scheme, we now know who you are, because you stand out as gaps in an otherwise beautiful smile. Next year, why don't you join the smile? Says Roger Farrell, Burriton Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
David Farthing asks, or says, Rotary's thanks. Sir, on behalf of Winchester Rotary, may I use your columns to thank the people of Winchester and surrounding area for their truly magnificent response to our public raffle in support of the British Paralympic goalball team. Adam and David Knott from Chandler's Ford, both partially sighted, were immensely proud to be selected for the team and to represent their country at the Games. They are delighted Winchester Rotary raised the significant sum of £4,250, which will be used by Goalball UK for the further development of this excellent game for blind and partially sighted people. David Farthing, Winchester Rotary, Old Kettles Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Rural communities are further isolated by County Council, writes Elizabeth Hiscock. Sir, I was shocked to read in your issue of September the 20th that Hampshire County Council has £3.5 million to spend on state-of-the-art bus stops. Living where I do, bus users know only too well what the reduction in services has meant. No going out on a Sunday or visiting relatives in hospital, and no going out in the evening because you can't get back. If the bus doesn't go there, you don't work or visit there. Not everyone can afford a car or taxis. Ironically, in my childhood, we were able to use buses early and late, 7 days a week from here. Bus passes for pensioners, I'll qualify in 8 years if they still exist, are useless if there isn't a bus. I cannot see that this system will attract huge numbers of extra passengers, nor in any way generate enough income to justify this expense. No one is going to leave the car behind if the service is poor. Rural communities again appear to be further isolated. Does Hampshire County Council really care about the ordinary person? That letter is from Elizabeth Hiscock, Blanchard Way, Bishop's Waltham.
That concludes the letters, and we now move on to the items of historical interest. And we have them from 200, 150 and 25 years ago. And of course, 200 years ago was the year 1812, which of course was a very momentous year.
200 years ago. On the 4th of August, the Emperor Napoleon, at the head of his army, 100,000 strong, made his appearance before Smolensk and was received by the corps of General Raevsky. The battle commenced at 6 o'clock in the morning and at noon became most bloody. The courage of the Russians overcame numbers and the enemy was repulsed at every point.
And this is from 100 years ago, 1912. Harry Vine, labourer of Cannon Street, pleaded guilty before the city bench to being found drunk in Winchester on Saturday. P.C. Englefield spoke to finding him surrounded by a large crowd in the High Street, the worse for liquor. Prisoner said he was very sorry, but it was his birthday. Chairman observed that the prisoner seemed to have had many such birthdays, and said he would be fined 2 shillings and 6 pence.
50 years ago, 1962. At the Courtney Road Project appeal, charges of offensiveness and unwillingness to negotiate were made against Winchester City Council and Hampshire County Council. Mr. F. H. B. Layfield for the appellants, or the appellants, which is it? I don't know. Golden Acre Properties alleged that the local authority's statement of case contained egregious remarks and claimed the history of events show that the council has been obstructive and difficult throughout. I say the council because it is not easy to discover whether it is the city council or the county council that is the operative factor in this case.
I should just say that we don't select these letters specifically because we have the mayor reading with us today. This is just what comes out of the Hampshire Chronicle.
From 25 years ago, that's 1987. The September meeting of the Winchester Labour Party included a wide-ranging discussion on the alternative routes for the M3 around Winchester. Practically unanimously, the members resolved to support the City Council Planning Committee's preferred solution of a tunnel under St Catherine's Hill. Chris Pines described a site visit undertaken by county and city councillors to examine the archaeological and environmental consequences of the suggested cutting through Twyford Down.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will be followed by a letter from Westminster from our local MP, and then finally, first person.
The editorial comment says, another blow to village life. There's no doubt that in a 100 years' time, when historians look back at social changes in the late 21st century, the decline of village community life will be clear. A century ago, each village was a thriving hub of activity, laden with shops, businesses, clubs, and societies. Today, many are little more than dormitories for the retired and commuters. Pubs have closed, shops struggle, although the rate of closure has slowed in recent years, and things like bus services ebb away. Happily, there is often good news to report, such as the official opening on Monday of 15 houses by Hazley Developments in Twyford for people with local links. The developer has worked with various social agencies and will help preserve a healthy social mix there. It is one step forward, but elsewhere it was the case of one step back. That is what the Royal Mail's stance on the collection of undelivered mail in the villages, including South Wanston and King Somborne, so maddening. Instead of continuing a traditional delivery being left at the local post office, customers now have to trek to the sorting office in Winchester. For the elderly and those without cars, that is a major inconvenience and another blow to village life.
Westminster Diary by Steve Bryan, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. For those of you who haven't noticed, it's party conference season, and I'm sure my constituents can scarcely contain themselves. I have to confess, I have never been a fan of conference, and I predict in time the main parties will come to agree. Quite why any political party would want to invite the TV cameras in to watch a week of navel-gazing is puzzling to me, and my strong advice is to treat announcements from the party conference platform with a healthy pinch of salt. Back in the real world, I have found an upside to the annual conference season. A short recess from Parliament, which allows me to spend even more time, while Labour and the Lib Dems meet at least, beavering away here in the constituency. Workload at the moment is off the scale, so that's always welcome. Last week I visited A4E at their offices in Southgate Street, Winchester. A4E are the local firm contracted to operate the government's innovative work programme designed to get local job seekers into sustainable work. And by the way, that is a capital A with a number 4 and a lowercase e. Referrals come from the job centre and a wide range of training and mentoring services are available to get the long-term unemployed up and running again. It's early days for the programme, but I like the way A4E have set up here, and the fact that they operate under a payment-by-results regime. They only get paid once they have got a job seeker into work for at least 6 months. It's spot on for me. The work programme needs local businesses to support it if it's to thrive, and it was therefore good to meet the Landscape Group's local team during my visit. They have recruited successfully via the scheme and haven't looked back. If you run a local business and want to try something different when it comes to recruiting, give them a chance and visit A4E. I have posted more about this and pictures from when I met the team and job seekers at my www.stevebryne.com. Steve Bryne is B-R-I-N-E. My shop in Stockbridge Road is now a collection point for the Winchester Basics Bank. This brilliant local charity is running very low on supplies and they need our help. So if you can spare some required items from your weekly shop, please come to Stockbridge Road or contact them direct. Winter is coming and there are more families than ever relying on WBB. After the stunning start to autumn last week, this week has seen the rain, and it started in spectacular fashion last Sunday when Popcorn and I visited the Hiltingbury Extravaganza. After a break in 2011, we had high hopes for a bumper year to raise some serious cash for good local causes, but the weather had other ideas. I just want to say an enormous well done to Councillor Mike Hughes and all the organisers for responding so well on the day, and to all the team for making the event, albeit a bit cramped inside the hilt, fun and carrying on regardless. Finally, it was a pleasure as always last weekend to meet many of the new students arriving in the city at the University of Winchester's Freshers' Fair.
First Person this week is written by Rosemary McMullen and she entitles it, Speak to Me, Why Don't You? I marvelled at the fact that I'd been transported through the sky so speedily. I'd be in Fife as quickly as if I was going from Winchester to London. I was met by a fraught sister whose mobile phone had malfunctioned. She can't get by without it and dragged me off to buy a replacement. Her search for an acceptable ringtone had me wincing as one strident blast followed another. Back home, she texted her entire circle of friends to make sure it was working. Meanwhile, bursts of rage emanated from the room upstairs, where her husband was phoning around officialdom in a vain effort to help a friend in Thailand who had lost some vital papers and faced deportation. A friendly hello hug was obviously out of the question. I don't even want another car. I was perfectly happy with the one I've got, wailed my sister, whose loving husband had impulsively bought her a new set of wheels before giving her the chance to test drive it. Not a wise move. He listed its virtues. More powerful engine, superior legroom, better quality radio, but tailed off in the face of her obvious lack of enthusiasm. It is a pretty colour, I ventured. Slipping into the passenger seat, I held my tongue as the gears grated and stuck and couldn't help wondering why it was so noisy. At supper, a post-mortem revealed both had skidded on a wet road, found the tyres noisy, and agreed that they had to buy new ones. Back on the phone, John's blood pressure rose as he argued with the garage about the dangerous tyres, but they did agree to sell him a new pair at cost price, so we began to relax. One of the purest pleasures I relish when I'm back home is listening to the porky humour and ways of speech I remember from childhood. "Aye, it's a dreich day, right enough," commented a passer-by who might have been my great-aunt, huddled as she was in the same style of long dark coat and a scarf against the cold. Soon I am bantering away with the best of them and enjoying an evening in the pub, where the silver-haired, dark-eyed landlord greets me as if I were there last week. "Ah, oh, it's Ruth's wee sister, good to see you." The mixture of Italian Scots gives his voice a lovely lilt, and we keep him talking just to hear it. Now, we are not too occupied now with problematic cars and phones. We will all hopefully enjoy my stay. I had forgotten that things come in threes. As John raised his glass to me, I noticed he was scratching at his waist. "Oh, just an insect bite or two," he assured us. Next day, Ruth rushed past me, mobile clamped to her ears. "Shingles? Oh, no, wait till I tell the kids." "Speak to me," I mutter, but realise it's useless. "Have to talk to her, I suppose. Have to text her, I guess."
We now move on to items of general news interest, but before we start on those, a very special item in the paper about Rennie Locke, who of course is one of our readers, a great supporter of the Talking Newspaper, yes, member of the Colebrook Club, and she has just celebrated... She has just celebrated her 100th birthday. So, Rennie's VIP treatment. A Winchester reading group has marked the birthday of its oldest member. Rennie Locke of Oliver's Battery, a member of the Visually Impaired People's Reading Group at the Discovery Centre, celebrated her 100th birthday on the 20th of September. A few days earlier, there was a rather special book meeting where celebrations, including chocolate cake, balloons and gifts such as a subscription from the RNIB National Library Postal Service. Rennie had been relying on an old cassette player, but the subscription includes the loan of a Daisy disc player, giving her access to the RNIB's 19,000 audiobooks. And there was also a formal celebration for her at St Peter's Church, Jury Street, on the Saturday. And there's a photograph of Rennie, a lovely photograph of her, which is entitled In the Pink, and she is in pink, and she really looks in the pink. So, Rennie, a very happy 100th birthday from us at the Talking Newspaper.
Here, here.
Here, here.
Access row comes to a close, but gate stays open. A dispute over the gateway to a central Winchester street may finally have come to a close. Access to Allison Way from Oram's Arbour is controversial because some residents have complained of antisocial behaviour late at night, but councillors have again rejected an application to block the path. At a planning committee meeting last Thursday, the City Council reiterated the gateway was a planning condition when St Paul's Hospital was converted into homes in 2000-2001. Some residents reported thuggish behaviour and discarded drugs paraphernalia on the path late at night. It was also claimed that criminals had been known to use the gate as a shortcut to evade police. But community safety officers' reports show just two recorded cases of antisocial behaviour there between November 2011 and May 2012. The council received 65 objections to the application against just 9 representations supporting it. All the supporters came from Allison Way, whilst 2 of the objections also came from there. Councillor Therese Evans said, "I was on the original planning committee in 1999, and the intention was permeability, and it's important that remains. I do not think we should take a safely lit road away from members of the public." Addressing the committee, Planning Officer Howard Bone said, "We've always required for this kind of development that there be public access. It's safer. But you will never design away antisocial behaviour completely." The rejection is the latest development in a battle dating back to 2008, when Kempthorne, the management company responsible for homes at Oram's Mount, installed a keypad-controlled lock on the gate, only giving the code to residents. The lock was removed in 2009, after the City Council threatened legal action against Kempthorne for breaching its planning permission.
Charity on the move after 20 years. A Winchester-based charity needs to find a new home after it was revealed its current premises is due to be sold. Beaconsfield House, home to Community Action Hampshire, is currently being marketed by estate agent Carter Jonas. The charity declined to comment on the sale and if it was relocating to another part of Winchester or beyond. CAH has been based at Beaconsfield House, a large Victorian house at the junction of Andover Road and Park Road, for more than 20 years. Richard Meeson, partner at Carter Jonas in Winchester, said CAH wanted to move because the building was too expensive to run. He said, It is uneconomical for CAH to modify the property to suit their current and future needs, and so they are looking to relocate. Mr. Meeson added, an offer for the building has been accepted, but would not disclose who the buyer is or how much it was for legal reasons. The house is a large garden and a space for a number of houses. Paul Williams, Chief Executive of Winchester Area Community Action, WACA, said he believes the charity will continue to operate. He said, I think what everybody is trying to do now, especially infrastructure organisations, is trying to find the most effective way to use their resources. If it costs too much money for a building that is not really fit for purpose, you could be spending that cash helping your frontline groups. It is similar to when WACA left the Winchester Centre for Colebrook Street for exactly the same reasons.
Uni Chief's ambition to grow student numbers. The University of Winchester could grow by nearly 50%, its Vice-Chancellor told Preservation Watchdogs. Professor Joy Carter said she could foresee the university, which currently has some 7,000 students, expanding to 10,000 in future years, an increase of 43%. Professor Carter was giving a presentation to the annual general meeting of the City of Winchester Trust, attended by around 80 members. She said, 10,000 is a number we would be pleased with. I don't think the city would notice an extra 3,000 students. That claim surprised many in the audience at the university's Stripe Theatre on Monday and may well be disputed by many, as the studentification of former council estates such as Stanmore and Winnall has been controversial for several years. There has been growing concern that the conversion of family homes into homes in multiple occupation has been driven by the rising number of students. Professor Carter, who was elected as the Trust's new president in place of Judge Christopher Clark, QC, said the university was taking measures to reduce the scholars' impact on the city. She said, we are building residences like crazy and getting more students onto the campus rather than in the city. The Queen's Road residences opened in 2010, providing 400 bedrooms, and Burma Road residences are partially completed. One block opened this summer. Professor Carter added that the current economic climate, as well as the increase in tuition fees, was limiting growth anyway. She said, the current government policy does not allow universities to grow as in the past. Most growth will be from international students. There are 50,000 fewer students in the country as a whole than last year. Patrick Davis, chairman of the policy group at the Trust, said he did not believe there was much chance of the university hitting the 10,000 figure anytime soon. I was a bit surprised to hear her say that, he said. I think it's very much an aspiration for the long term, decades. The reality is they cannot do it without government approval. Can Winchester absorb? It is difficult to know. The objective is to take students out of Stanmore and other estates, but there still seems to be the same number of student households all over the city.
Give children their childhood back, says MP. A Hampshire MP has launched a campaign on body image to give children their childhood back. The Conservative MP for Romsey and Southampton North says that children as young as five feel that they are too fat, thin, ugly, or just don't look right. And it is Britain's culture of idolising airbrushed images of A-listers like Cheryl Cole that is partly to blame. Miss Noakes has been appointed head of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Body Image, which is lobbying for advertisers to reflect authenticity and diversity and better controls of the cosmetic surgery industry. Miss Noakes' appointment came as a result of David Cameron's reshuffle, which saw the former head, Lib Dem Joe Swinson, promoted. Miss Noakes said, it's something I have quite an interest in because representations in the media and advertising are just so unrealistic. Children are under a lot of pressure to try to conform to ideals that the media dream up. The group's report says there is a need for a wider range of body images in adverts. Miss Noakes insists that, although it might seem harmless, every time Cheryl Cole beams out from a shampoo advert, it is sending the wrong message. Celebrities have a big influence on our young people, she added. When I see young girls starving themselves because they want to look like their favourite celebrity, or children upset because they don't have the same glorious bouncing hair as Gerald Cole, I think celebrity culture has an awful lot to answer for. Central to the group's campaign is the view that society needs to be tolerant of people's shapes and sizes, because the consequences of our current attitudes can be deadly. The flip side to the glamorous images we see on screen was brought home when Miss Noakes visited an eating disorder clinic in Hampshire. She said, "It made an enormous impression. They're doing absolutely phenomenal work in helping a whole range of people, both male and female, teenagers, to recover from very serious disorders." Parents too have a key role to play, she added. Another change Miss Noakes wants to see is the use of the body mass index, known as BMI, as a measure of good health, which she feels sends out the wrong message. Now the group's report has been published, the MPs will try to pressurise the government into acting on their recommendations. This is a major issue, and it's time we started to take it seriously, said Miss Noakes.
Fears over future of blood testing. Health chiefs have attempted to allay fears about the future of blood testing at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. Bosses at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust insisted essential and emergency blood tests will remain at the RHCH after a patient raised concerns about the service moving to Basingstoke Hospital. Retired businessman Brian Orange, who suffers from cancer, voiced his fears in a letter to the chairman and chief executive of the recently merged trust which runs the RHCH, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke North Hampshire Hospital. Mr. Orange, 66, who lives in King's Somborne, said he was concerned blood testing is set to move from the RHCH to Basingstoke Hospital as part of cost-cutting measures. He fears this could mean delays for Winchester patients, including those in need of emergency treatment. He wrote, "This may save money, but as a service to the patient, I can only foresee blood tests results coming from Basingstoke must take noticeably longer. The idea of closing down all blood testing in Winchester is a real sign that RHCH is being sidelined." Mr. Orange suffers from multiple myeloma cancer, a form of blood cancer, and has monthly blood tests on Nick Jonas Ward at the RHCH. Depending on the results, he receives treatment, such as a blood transfusion. Currently, he only has a 2-hour wait between testing and treatment, but fears it will be longer if blood samples have to be taken to Basingstoke for testing. Mr. Orange said he was also concerned about potential delays for other patients. One member of staff at the RHCH, who asked not to be named, said, "Staff morale is at an all-time low because staff at Winchester feel undervalued by the managers compared to their Basingstoke counterparts." However, in a statement, Mary Edwards, chief executive of the Hospital Trust, said, "Essential and emergency blood tests will remain at all our hospitals, which includes the RHCH. We are also developing this service to enable patients to get blood tests closer to home, including GP surgeries. There is no intention to reduce the availability of blood testing or chemotherapy services. In addition, we have launched a new service that offers chemotherapy from a mobile unit to give patients access to that service closer to home." Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Brine said it was important to keep the consultant link for local GPs to discuss patients' blood test results. He said, "I want a world-class hospital trust delivering services for the people I represent that are sustainable in the long term and above all, safe. Bringing two organisations together is never easy and requires compromise.
Consult before deciding care homes' future. Housing bosses have agreed to move residents out of a Winchester care home and will now consider alternative uses for the site. Victoria House will no longer provide sheltered housing for the elderly, but housing chiefs were warned they could face a backlash from nearby residents. At a housing committee meeting last Wednesday, Councillor Dominic Hiscock urged caution when deciding future uses for the site in Victoria Road, Hyde. He said, "The idea that as a result there could be even higher density of people needing support in that area would be met by residents with disbelief." The closure of Victoria House is a response to the County Council's requirement that extra care tenants, elderly people living in self-contained homes with the legal right to occupy the property, should be upgraded from the studio accommodation to one-bedroom flats. Councillor Hiscock's concern came in the wake of an August report by the Hampshire Chronicle, which brought to light residents' anger at antisocial behaviour around the city centre. Behaviour some locals felt was coming from support centres for the homeless. Councillor Hiscock fears the site could now be used as a move-on accommodation for homeless people seeking to settle and reintegrate into society, arguing it is too near to other support sites to be suitable. Addressing the committee, he said, "Before any decision is made, you need to go and look at it, and you need to talk to residents and the people who work there."
Care Village given the green light. Plans to transform a former hospital site into a multi-million pound care village have got the go-ahead. Developers want to build a 48-bedroom home and more than 160 apartments at the Mount in Bishopstoke. The site has been derelict since 2004 after health bosses shut an outpatient rehabilitation centre. Plans to turn the area into a retirement community for disabled people and pensioners will create up to 110 jobs and house up to 300 residents, according to developers. The work would be carried out in two phases, and Bishopstoke, Fair Oak and Halton Heath Local Area Committee gave full planning permission to the first phase, which will see a village core created to house the care home and flats, along with 56 separate assisted living apartments. Outline planning permission was also granted for 53 assisted living flats to the south of the site. There will also be a restaurant, activity rooms, a library and a wellness, health suite and spa, which other pensioners and disabled people in the community will be able to use.
Panto will be just magic. With the last remnants of summer coming to an abrupt end this week, it was somehow appropriate that the Theatre Royal launched its Christmas pantomime. Aladdin will be the Winchester venue's most expensive yet, according to its director, Mark Curtis, featuring stunning effects and a live band for the first time. Mr. Curtis said, "I think this will end our autumn season with a bang. We are very aware that we rely on people coming to join us at Christmas, but we must never take them for granted. So we put more time, effort and money into making the show even better." Aladdin writer and director James Barry returns for his eighth pantomime at the theatre. Mr. Barry said, "Aladdin is by any yardstick the Christmas pantomime. It is always the number one or two with audience and venue. What's really important for me is that children come here for the story. Adults come for the jokes. But we want the children to believe the illusion and action and boo the baddies because they do evil things." Another familiar face, Julian Eardley, is returning for his fifth stint as the dame, and this time Widow Twankey, while Rachel Fox is again designing the set and effects. The pantomime runs from December 12th until January 6th, 2013, and the article is accompanied by a very colourful photograph showing the principal actors in their costume, as Felicity McCormack as Princess Jasmine, Steve Ritchie as Wishy Washy, John Deville, or Deville, as Ebenezer, and he's got the magic lamp there, Hannah Jackson as Slave of the Ring, and Julian Eardley as Widow Twankey, looking very, very overdressed and over-make-out.
Guiding in the Gambia. A Winchester guiding leader is going to the Gambia on a development trip. Vanessa Ellis of Bedford Place, Southampton, volunteers at Winchester City West Brownies. In preparation, the 25-year-old has attended 5 training weekends with other leaders. When not dedicating time to guiding, she is a deputy community leader at homeless charity Emmaus in Winchester. "I'm really excited about the trip," said Vanessa, who has never been to Africa before. "They've got their own training centre where we'll be working." Guiding Overseas Linked Development, that's G-O-L-D or GOLD, project volunteers are hoping to work with girls from as young as 6 up to the oldest leaders. The main aims of this project are to strengthen guiding in Gambia and enable the voices of girls and women to be heard. Vanessa began to raise £2,500 to be part of this project last November. Girl guiding branches across Winchester were amongst the organisations which helped her fundraise.
Winners announced. Winchester's green-fingered residents have been celebrating the announcement of the winners of their annual gardening competition. The competition, which aims to reward residents for taking pride in their home and improving community spaces, is run by a local housing association group, A2 Dominion. That is capital A, number 2, Dominion. Home-based vouchers and certificates went to the winners. Gardens were assessed by members of South Central Residents Forum, and Wendy Mills, a judge and resident, said, "The gardening competition often attracts a high standard of entries, and although there were fewer this year due to the wet spring weather, the standard was just as high. It was great to see the pride that people take in their gardens." The winners were Lynn Adams and Graham Nutbeam of Upton Grey Close, Hairstock, for Best Garden. Best Novice went to Mr. and Mrs. R.J. Hubbard of Spitfire End, Winnell. Mrs. Suthang Daniel of Francis Sheldon Court scooped Best Balcony, with the runners-up for Best Balcony going to Mrs. Catherine Cliff of Alvane Court, Parchment Street.
Bus routes approved, despite objections. A row has erupted between city councillors over new bus routes, with one describing the plans as a dog's dinner. Winchester Town Forum discussed extra evening services linking Badger Farm, Stanmore, Week and Hairstock with the city centre. But some members were unhappy that more areas were not included. Councillor Janet Berry said, "Winnell and Highcliffe have been excluded from the proposals when they are high priorities in the Community Action Plan." Councillor Ian Tate would not support the proposal, saying, "This is a dog's dinner. I won't support a selective route going up to Oliver's Battery and Badger Farm. It is a selective service not meeting the needs of the community." However, the forum voted to recommend that Hampshire County Council enter into a contract with Stagecoach, which will come at a cost of around £13,000 over 2 years. Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "If we could do it everywhere, we would, but we can't. We have got to trial it somewhere." Other members expressed concern that the city was meeting costs that could be met by other parties. Councillor Jamie Scott said, "Who is the provider of bus services? I say it's the County Council, not the city." Forum Chairman Brian Collin concluded that members would review the service after a year rather than after 2 years, as previously suggested.
It's a family affair. A Winchester author may have exposed an illicit affair by a former British Prime Minister. Bobby Neat of Takedown has written Conspiracy of Secrets, an investigation into the life of her stepfather, Lewis Stanley. After a decade of research, Bobby alleges Stanley's birth was the result of an illicit affair between former Prime Minister Herbert Asquith and Venetia Stanley, an aristocrat's daughter. There has long been speculation about the exact nature of the relationship between Asquith and the much younger Venetia. Bobby, a former publisher and University of Winchester lecturer, said, "The book was traumatic to write because I was brought up with a very strange stepfather. When my mother had a stroke, my stepfather began acting very strangely. I started to think he was illegitimate, and I looked at his name, Stanley, and I searched for members of Parliament named Stanley. By chance, I saw a photo of Asquith, and I thought he looked just like Stanley, and that's what sparked off the research." She added, "They looked so identical, and then I found out that they had very similar personalities through my research. I cannot prove it without DNA evidence, but everything fits." Bobby said the book was selling well, and although she does not keep an eye on its performance because it was so emotional to write.
Plan for homes on pub site, scuppered. So from the sublime to the ridiculous all the other way around. A major development in Stanmore was ditched following a badly flawed application. Developers wanted to demolish the new Queen's Head pub on Stanmore Lane and build 14 new homes and a convenience store. But last Thursday, city housing chiefs rejected the plans amid bizarre scenes at the Guildhall. The planning committee meeting was briefly interrupted by an interjection from the developer. Then Councillor Barry Lipscombe took the unusual step of requesting that Chairman Ernest Jeffs permit council officers to step outside the room to clarify the point being made by the developer. Controversy centred on whether the site was large enough to trigger the council's policy that 40% of the new homes should be affordable. Concerns were raised that plans submitted by Bargate Homes contained only 11% affordable housing. The confusion had arisen because some of the land within the proposed site was considered undevelopable, as it is too steep. Upon returning to the room, Simon Finch, head of planning management, said, "As it stands, this triggers the threshold for affordable housing." Officers recommended the proposals be rejected on the grounds that they did not provide an appropriate mix of affordable housing and that a better development was possible. There were particular concerns that the homes were not sympathetic to Stanmore's landscape. Stanmore councillor Jamie Scott was one of only two members to vote in favour of the plans. He said, "The feeling in Stanmore is that they've lost a real pub, but we need to move on as a community. I think common sense has to prevail here." But the committee voted overwhelmingly to reject the application. The Hampshire Chronicle reported last summer on the doomed bid to save the pub, with scores of residents signing a petition to keep the last remaining pub on the estate. Its other pub, the Stanmore Hotel, served its final pint 3 years ago after Winchester City Council blocked plans to turn it into a care home, only to see the decision overturned following a challenge by developers Colton Developments. The care home has since been opened. Fair Oak-based Bargate Homes had previously submitted proposals for 14 homes and a childcare nursery to replace the pub. Those plans were unpopular with both councillors and residents and were dismissed on appeal in May this year. The committee's decision brings an end to Bargate's involvement with the site, as its option to purchase on the land will soon expire. Managing Director Angus Cook said, "We are saddened by this position, but I want to thank the members of the council for their thoughtful consideration."
Councils pledge to tackle damp in flats. Winchester civic chiefs have earmarked £300,000 a year to tackle mould and damp in council homes. Councillors say that major investment in extraction fans is necessary to tackle the effect of condensation. Over the next 6 to 7 years, the council hopes all of its dwellings will be fitted with extractor fans to both kitchens and bathrooms. Speaking at a committee meeting on Wednesday, Councillor Jamie Scott said, "The last thing they want is for someone to say, 'Here's an instruction DVD.' They want their clothes to smell better and their properties to be dry. I'm conscious that there are young children in these properties and some of these tenants are experiencing severe cold and damp problems." The Hampshire Chronicle reported in June how the council had received hundreds of complaints from tenants last year and that housing bosses had held a special debate in response. The findings suggest most problems arose from drying clothes indoors or leaving windows closed for weeks on end, trapping moisture in the air. Council did not feel that poor design of the flats was the primary cause. However, Councillor Ian Tate said, "When you knock on residents' doors, you soon realise that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. There are a significant number of people who cannot overcome the necessary lifestyle changes. I think this is an absolutely excellent report and the recommendations are excellent." To solve the problems, council chiefs favour mechanical extractor fans in the first instance, only fitting positive input ventilation when the former has proved ineffective. The problem is of particular concern in flats at Winnell and Stanmore. With the winter fast approaching, council have said the work will begin with immediate effect.
And now a story about Martin Merritt, who is a retiring fireman. Martin signs off after 30 years. A firefighter from Winchester has said a fond farewell to colleagues 30 years after he first joined the service. Martin Merritt of Ebden Road, Winnell, joined Hampshire Fire and Rescue as a retained firefighter after receiving help himself following a bonfire accident. He was so impressed by the professionalism of the firemen who attended that he contacted a cousin of his in the service who arranged for him to visit his local fire station. Mr. Merritt said, "It will be strange to see the engine rushing around town and not hearing my alert going off." Mr. Merritt said that during his 30 years, he's seen some drastic changes. "The main change is how difficult it is now to get retained members to join and how employers' attitudes have changed in terms of how much harder it is for some people to get their employers to agree," he said. "There have been some memorable emergencies to deal with, but," Mr. Merritt said, "a fire at the Mitteldeva tyre depot stands out." He said, "It was just turning up and seeing the damage that was done. At that point in my career, I did not realise the damage that tyres could actually do." Mr. Merritt's last training day was at Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service headquarters at Eastleigh on Monday night. Speaking beforehand, he says, "We've got the new pump and no doubt the guys have got something planned for me. Normally on the last night, somebody gets wet." When not fighting fires, 49-year-old Mr. Merritt enjoys spending time with his grandson and his wife Donna. He won't be putting his feet up just yet, though, as he will continue to work as a neighbourhood warden for Southampton City Council. David Truman, watch manager at Winchester Fire Station, said, "I would like to say that firefighter Martin Merritt is leaving Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service after 30 years of loyal service. He is a great asset to the station and he will be missed."
Two breweries in city within a month. It's almost like London buses. After decades without a brewery in the city, two have set up in Winchester within the last month. Batch Brewery follows Alfred's Brewery in opening this month, although the two are very different, according to Batch director Phil Whitwell. He said, "We have a different focus than traditional real ales. We deliberately picked something a bit more obscure for our first beer, which was a black lager, and then we started focusing on other recipes, including a wheat beer and pale ale. Our strapline is love beer again. So we are trying to market our non-traditional beer to to the student market, and the brand is designed to be young and attractive. Mr. Whitwell, aged 41, and his business partners toasted the official opening of the brewery at a party at the Corner House in North Walls on Monday, where the beer is on sale. He moved to Winchester 3 years ago and decided to set up the business with brewer Paul Hancock because they saw a gap in Winchester. Mr. Whitwell, who works in IT, said, "We picked Winchester because there wasn't a brewery here, but now we have Alfred's and us. But Steve Haig and I are in communication, and we are quite different in our focus, because Alfred's is more concerned with traditional cask ale, and we are in the bottle market." The business is managed from Mr. Whitwell's home in Sussex Street, although the beer is currently brewed in Gosport and the stored in Pitt. So far, £15,000 has been invested in the business, although that could increase if they reach their long-term goal of setting up premises in Winchester. Mr. Whitwell added, "Our objective is to set up a brew house in Winchester, which will be a small-scale brewery with attached bar, and that would be a significant investment. But what we need to do now is just raise awareness. The company already has a dozen customers in Winchester, including the Black Rat Restaurant and Black Bottle Wine Bar, while several City Off licenses are also selling it."
And from news about a brewery to news about a pub, this little piece is called Couple's New Venture Set Sail. A couple from Winchester had begun married life by taking on a huge challenge. Rob and Anna Plunton are the new landlords at the Ship Inn in Wales Street, following a major refurbishment. The couple previously ran the Five Bells in Stockbridge, but wanted to return to Winchester where they both grew up. Rob, 24, said, "We're from Winchester and used to drink in the Ship. What better way to start married life than by putting a new lease of life into a pub that we used to love? We'll be placing a greater emphasis on food and hope that our new village reduced menu will appeal to people." Last month, Rob and Hannah married at St. Peter's Catholic Church in Winchester with the X Factor's Youssef Chico Slimani as best man. I hope that means more to you than it does to me. But there is a photograph of Rob and Hannah behind the bar at their new pub, looking very much open for business.
And now a story ready for winter. Insulation scheme, a big hit. More than 12,000 free installations of insulation have been delivered to homes across Hampshire, according to the latest figures. Members of the Hampshire Senate about the success of the Insulates Hampshire scheme. Insulate Hampshire is backed by the Hampshire Senate plus Eastleigh and Fareham borough councils and is funded by Scottish Power. The scheme offers free cavity wall and loft insulation to homeowners who already have less than 60 millimetres, that is 2.5 inches, of loft insulation. The aim of the scheme is to help residents save money on their fuel bills, cut CO2, carbon dioxide emissions, and create new jobs in Hampshire's economy. In the first year, Hampshire residents are expected to save £1.6 million on their annual energy bills and nearly 7,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide. At their latest meeting, the Hampshire Senate learned that around 100 jobs have been created and maintained in Hampshire since the scheme launched in July 2011. Since that time, over 81,000 people have contacted Insulate Hampshire and over 12,000 installations have gone ahead. Many of the installations have taken place at homes where the occupants are in fuel poverty and include owner-occupiers as well as those living in housing association properties and homes owned by the Forestry Commission. The definition of fuel poverty is where a household needs to spend more than 10% of their household income on all domestic fuel use, including appliances to heat their home to an adequate level of warmth. However, it is estimated by the Energy Saving Trust that householders can save over £300 per year if both cavity wall and loft insulation are installed where there is currently no insulation in place. In addition to installations, a DIY loft top-up programme has been developed by Insulate Hampshire that involves working with local community groups to hold events where residents can collect DIY rolls of loft insulation free of charge to top up their existing insulation. To find out more about the scheme and how to apply or register to attend local community DIY events, call free on 0800 952 0037. That is 0800 952 0037.
Couple kick-off pub celebrations. A unique Winchester husband and wife team are starting to celebrate the milestone of running their pub for some 40 years. Mike and Lynn Sinker have run the Baker's Arms for 39 years and will hit the 40-year anniversary next July. To start the celebrations, they are holding a Baker's Bonanza weekend at the pub off the High Street, starting on Friday. There will be a cheesy disco with live music from Jack's from 8 p.m. On Saturday from 8 p.m, the Baker's Band will perform rock and blues. And on Sunday from 3 o'clock, the Lost Cause Cowboys will play. Lynn said, "I don't think anyone is ever going to get close to 40 years. Old staff and regulars are welcome to help them celebrate, and a charity collection will be made for Macmillan Cancer Support."
Committee call. A Winchester charity is appealing for volunteers ahead of its 10th anniversary next year. The National Osteoporosis Society Winchester Support Group needs a new chairman and committee members to help continue its work. According to the society research, 1 in 2 women and 1 in 5 men in the UK over the age of 50 will break a bone due to the condition. The same committee has served the Winchester group since it formed, but they are now standing down to give others an opportunity. 4 people have already volunteered for the secretarial and treasurer roles, but anyone interested in joining should contact Maureen Morrison on 01380 828889. I'll repeat it: 01380 828889.
Joy is WINAC's first patron. Professor Joy Carter, Vice-Chancellor of the University of Winchester, has been named patron of Winchester Action on Climate Change. That's WINAC. Professor Carter, who has a background in environmental geochemistry, is the first person to take on the newly created role. She said, "WINAC is a professional, well-managed organisation which is working tirelessly in an area of huge importance to humankind. It inspires and facilitates organisations and citizens in Winchester and district to work together creatively to accelerate the move to a low-carbon society." Chris Holloway, WINAC director, added, "Having the support of an important local figure in Professor Joy Carter will help us raise awareness of climate change, probably the biggest challenge humanity has ever faced." The group was formed in 2007 with the aim of cutting Winchester's annual carbon footprint by 30% between 2004 and 2015. The University of Winchester is one of the founding members of WINAC and has given the group use of office space on campus. WINAC will hold its AGM on Saturday, October the 6th, in St Lawrence Parish Room, Colebrook Street, Winchester, at 10:30 a.m.
MP backs post office car licence contract bid. Winchester MP Steve Brine has called for the government to back post offices for a £600 million car licence contract. Kingsworthy Post Office could lose its service to renew car tax discs if Post Office fails to win the government DVLA contract. The contract, which covers all driving licences, tax discs and DVLA paperwork, has been put out to tender. But failure to win the new deal could cause financial losses large enough to close branches across the country. Sanjita Kaura, who runs the Kingsworthy branch, declined to comment other than to confirm she was concerned for her branch. She said, "If we lose this service, it would be difficult for quite a few of us post offices to survive because that is one of the biggest parts of our business." Speaking at the House of Commons in early September, Mr. Brine said, "Over the summer, I have been lobbied by many post office customers in Winchester, largely concerned about the future of Kingsworthy Post Office. I don't believe this coalition wants to close post office branches, but failure to support the renewal of the DVLA contract could have the unintended consequence of doing just that in some cases." He added, "Of course, I understand many people choose to access post office services online, and that is fine, but over-the-counter services are important in customer choice, and bluntly, a viable post office often means a viable local shop." Responding to the MP, Leader of the Commons, Andrew Lansley, said, "The government are absolutely clear that we will not entertain a process of post office closures. On the specific point, this contract process is currently live, and it would not be proper for ministers to comment or interfere during the course of that."
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors, who were Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Karen Cream.
Goodbye.
And our very grateful thanks to the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson.
Goodbye and God bless.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye also. Have a good week. And please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.